You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm one of the hosts of this lovely podcast, and joining me for the second time this week, because we are crazy and still doing five podcasts a week in the middle of July. It's from Forbes. It's your Pacer writer, Mr. Tony East. Tony, everybody has used their cap space essentially in the league. So now we're finally at the moment where not MLE guys, right? Room exception, all those kind of guys are going to start signing.
Yeah, the Hawks have $5.7 million in space. Assuming Marcus Morris to the Knicks is really happening. That means the next highest team in space is Utah at $1.7 million and the Pacers third at whatever they have after McConnell. So not that the cap space is super valuable at this point. That doesn't really matter to this discussion. It's just that every player left available is fighting for either the Spurs' full MLE because Marcus Morris spurned them. So in theory, that has more spending power than what the Pacers can offer. And room exceptions, and the Pacers have the room exceptions, so they are they have one of the best opportunities to spend and get someone good that they by being patient and kind of being forced to be patient. So now that it's shaken out the way it has, I kind of thought that they wouldn't sign anybody. I said this on the show earlier this week, Adam, that they wouldn't sign anybody till the Mavs were done. The Mavs are done, so now it's time for the bargain bin guys to go through.
I will say we are later than last year in terms of room exception mid-level guys signing.
Yeah, Kyle O'Quinn got signed pretty early last year, right?
July 6th. I just looked it up.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know why it's not like that much different. There's a lot of free agents. I think that's some of it. You know, I think teams knew that if they were patient, they could get a lot of guys fighting for not a lot of stuff.
I think everything was delayed by about 3 days because Kawhi took till July 6th. Not that it hurt the Pacers anyway, but it kind of froze everybody in the league up.
Yeah, it did. It did, which is interesting how that shook out. But the Mavs actually, I mean, their pretty much strategy was get Danny Green, if not keep their own guys, save up for 2021, which they did. But by them waiting, you know, all these other guys now are stretched thin. And the free agency list is Marcus Morris is probably the only, and Kelly Oubre are probably the only starting caliber guys left. And Kelly Oubre is almost certainly going back to the Suns. So
yeah, I mean, I'm assuming the reason Oubre hasn't signed a restricted sheet is because the offers were too low and he doesn't want to tie himself to some low contract.
Well, they kept his cap hold. The Suns did. Like, they made a bunch of, honestly, even outside of the Warren thing, they did a bunch of stupid things.
Bizarre. Let's call him bizarre.
Bizarre to keep in this cap hold of Oubre. So they're definitely going to try to keep him and go over the cap with it. And I actually read something or heard something that he has agreed to a deal in principle and is going to announce it when his clothing brand is announced or something. So he might not even be available.
Yeah, but Thomas Post, he might not. Oubre is a good basketball player. I mean, he's not fantastic, but he is
good
of quality value. Because I mean, I think when it comes to these room exception guys, each of them has more negatives than positives. Let's put it that way.
I don't agree with that.
I know you don't.
I think that they have something negative. Most of them have something negative about them, but I definitely don't think they have more negatives than positives.
I think they do simply because
Jermichael Green just got the room exception.
Who did?
Jermichael Green just got the room exception.
Again.
He's good. He has way more positives than negatives.
Again. It depends, I guess, what do you view as net neutral? Like, I view net neutral being able to play 60 games at 15 minutes. I don't think any of these guys can do that.
Oh, absolutely. I think tons of guys available can play 60 games for 15 minutes.
I think very few guys.
Jeremy Lin, Seth Volosha, Justin Holiday, Thomas.
Let's put it this way. Play it well, okay? Because I was at Lance signed for the Emily last year that
players who can play well for 15-plus minutes a game for 60 games get like $10 to $15 million.
Not necessarily.
You have now stretched it to being a starter.
No, I don't think you're a starter. I think that you can be the eighth or ninth guy, but there just aren't a lot of guys who are the eighth and ninth guy on teams who are
the eighth guys who are good and can play a lot every game.
So no, here's my thing too. when it gets down to the playoffs, none of these guys that Simon's room are probably going to be in a rotation when it comes to, like, no matter if the Pacers made it to the conference finals, they would probably cut this guy out of their rotation.
Probably, but that's not the bar for the room exception.
No, but that's what I mean. And that's what I mean is who you get with this spot, it matters a little bit, but if you miss, if he's not that good, if he doesn't play much, it's not that big of a deal. It's sort of about picking the right
one. That's not what you said.
Was what I said. I don't think they have positive value. I don't think they can add. Ultimately, I think when it comes down to it, they're never.
Well, I definitely think they have positive value, even if they can't play in the conference finals or if they're only like situationally useful. Like Cephalosha only playing when they're playing the Bucks or Mbamute or whoever they get, only playing when they play against these big wings or, you know, situationally they need a defensive lineup. Like we've talked about right now, that their four spot is embarrassing if they have to go a defensive lineup. I definitely think that guy has positive value.
See, I just that's right.
Tons of utility to the Pacers specifically too.
Yeah, but I think even where he adds a situational positivity to the team in terms of like being able to play that one moment. My lights just flashed, by the way, so I might run out of power at some point. I think overall they still add a negative value on the court because they can't be on it other times, and then it becomes sort of like it's this spot where it's just sort of a player you kind of. I guess have to get because you have to use it. It's worth using, but it's not somebody like there shouldn't be an expectation this guy is going to be at all valuable to the team in the whole season. Maybe for five games here or there, but not.
That's still different than what you started by saying.
But no, that's what I said.
This they just guy don't have, would have more negative values than positive, and now you're saying that you can't expect. Yeah. That's different than what you're saying. I can't handle these moving goalposts.
No, I think that's exactly what I'm saying. That ultimately they have a negative value on the team because they take minutes because they take minutes away from guys who have positive values in a way. Okay.
What?
That's where they become the this guy is not going to be good in every situational moment. He's gonna have more bad moments than good moments, no matter what. I mean, that's what Kyle O'Quinn was the same way. More bad moments than good moments. I mean, the guy before him
Kyle O'Quinn had way more good moments than bad.
Well, that's because they couldn't play because he was unplayable in moments that they may have needed him to play.
When?
I'm talking about let's say they need to go super big. They didn't really have the ability to do that because they knew they couldn't trust O'Quinn to be out there. When Sabonis Turner got hurt, they had to play Sabonis Turner 37 or 38 minutes because they knew they couldn't trust O'Quinn for more than 15 at a time. That kind of stuff. Or 10, I guess.
What? No, when did they have a situation where they couldn't trust O'Quinn? He started when they wanted to keep Sabonis on the bench. He did fine there. He backed up Turner well.
He played an average of 8 minutes per game. I mean,
Because Turner and Sabonis were healthy most of the year.
No, and I actually better than him. That's why I said it's 60 games or whatever. But if you look at the times he played, I mean, he played more than 15. He was never a plus in the court.
Oh, I think he was pretty good.
I mean, I'm just looking at plus my top of my head right now, just looking at the real quick. I mean, it's about hit or miss. You know, he had a couple games. Yeah, he was a plus 10, plus 4, plus 5. Then games where he was minus 9, minus 8. I mean, that's what I mean. It just minus 11 one game.
I bet you could find that same result for every player on the team.
But I'm talking about in the sense that if you have first of all, you probably wouldn't find every player because they had a winning record, so they had a positive plus minus all around. And two, I think with this position, it's more susceptible to a guy being really good or really not really good, but being to either neutral level or just negative when he's on the court.
I don't agree with that.
I just don't think it adds. I don't think this is a game changing kind of thing. I think it's.
Oh no, I'm not saying that.
A position where everybody has flaws.
Yes,
they can be good in certain moments, but most of the time, you can't play them or you won't be able to play them because they won't fit in certain moments, and that's where their negatives are. I guess maybe that's what I was trying to say. If that makes
sense. They're not playing, that's not a negative. If you're playing playing them in a role that they're bad at, yeah, that's a negative, and that's your team's fault, not the player's fault. Don't play a guy where he's going to be negative.
You can't. I mean, just because they're not playing doesn't mean it's all the team's fault. It's sort of they can't trust them to be in that situation. That means they have no value in that situation, which makes them have a negative value.
I'm saying if they are playing when they shouldn't be, that's the team's fault, not the other way around.
That's fine. And that's the point of the spot. You have to find guys that fit in a certain situation. But overall, they have negative
value.
And
if they play well in that situation, they're a positive player.
What?
And if they play well in that situation, then they're a positive player.
No, I think you're a negative player if you can't play in most situations in general. If you only can play in certain instances, it makes you a negative player. Because then if you are good enough, teams will try to scheme out of that or, you know, kind of thing if you can't play in certain spots. Just the same way a guy who can't shoot a three is sort of situationally can be negative because it's kind of the same way as times.
Absolutely.
It's the same kind
and
of
if you play him to shoot threes, that's stupid and makes him a negative guy. But if you sign, like I've said, Mbah Mute, and you say, don't play him outside of guard this really amazing wing, then he's going to help your team and be a positive. But if you say, go do shoot the ball, that's bad, and then he'll be a negative.
I guess, is there a win share stat for basketball? I know there's in baseball. Win shares? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a win share stat.
Okay, so like how many guys in the room do you think have a positive win shares?
Everybody has a positive win shares.
Okay. So what's like the line where you get that's – I guess what's like the average or neutral line?
I think everybody has positive win shares. I know. Win shares is such a bad stat.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's really good in baseball. It's probably not any good in basketball. There's sort of this line of – I mean, I wouldn't call it average. I'd just call it just
– Jeff Teague in his lone season in Indiana led the team in win shares.
Yeah, that's not a good sign because Paul George was kind of half-assing it that year, so maybe he was.
I even think half-assed Paul George is better than Jeff Teague.
I don't know. I remember for like 60 games, Paul George didn't care, and then all of a sudden he wanted to get that the DNE, and all of a sudden he tried for like 30 games and looked like one of the best players in the league.
Yeah.
And then he proceeded.
Yeah, only, like 20 guys it looks like had negative win shares.
Okay. I mean, I don't know what – like is there like a line? Like if you're above three, you're considered
– Kyle O'Quinn had a one.
Okay. I don't know what that means. I mean, you're right.
At one win share.
I don't know. That's what I mean. I don't know what the stat is. Maybe that's right. Yes, if you provide one win, that is a positive value. What was Lance's? I'm just curious.
Control F Lance. He had 1.1.
Okay. So maybe
it is a cumulative stat. So him playing more is why he had more than O'Quinn.
Well, and that's why I guess that kind of helps factor in the fact the guys can't play in certain instances, right? If they, because you play more, you can provide more. So maybe that's the line, right? If you have above a 1.1, then you're a positive value. Below that, you don't. Because that's, we both agree Lance had negative value for his team last year, right?
Yes, he was bad.
So if let's say the line is 1.2, because Lance, so O'Quinn theoretically had negative value for the team.
I don't agree that O'Quinn had negative value.
Well, he couldn't play.
He played like half the games.
I know, but he also.
Cephalosha had more win shares than Lance. There you go. Done. Positive player, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, first of all,
still available.
Cephalosha in this, let's get the players. Cephalosha in Luke Mbah-Mute is the injury factor. That's not even the fact that they're not positive player. It's the injury. That's their negative part to it, I guess. That's why they are still available currently.
Yeah. They're good players when they're healthy.
Which a player like that is really overqualified for the room. But if you get a guy like that, that's sort of the right
side. I don't know how they're going to get more than the room at this point. So
No. And that's what I was going to try to kind of go to is that if you can find a guy who has more positive value, even if they have an injury risk, that's the player to go after and not necessarily the ones who are just have always been MLE or room exception guys.
Yes. Yeah, that's the guys I want.
Okay, so let's do some players real quick. Give me your list of –
My short list of forwards that can play good defense and help are Cephalosha and Mbah Mute, and less so but in a different way, Donatas Montiunas.
Okay.
Only played three games last year, was overseas, but I think Montiunas is pretty good.
To me, Mbah Mute is the most interesting one of those three.
Yes, I think so too.
Maybe that's because I'm, kind of biased or kind of shaded in by his performance in the playoffs a couple years ago. It was really good with the Rockets.
Great for the Rockets. Fantastic. Yeah.
I mean, the question is, I guess, how healthy is he? I mean, he only played.
He was healthy he played 60 or more games every year except for last year. He's played over 8. He's played 80 over 80. 79. He's played over 3 times.
So what happened last year?
I don't remember. He only played 4 games. I think it was a foot thing.
Okay. Which is scary for a guy.
I don't remember what it is. I'm trying to see if it's on his news wire here.
It was the shoulder in the playoffs, right? 2 years ago, he played a shoulder.
Yeah. Man, I can't figure it out. Okay. Yeah, Mbah Mute is really good at defense. I'm all about him sneaking in there.
But if his foot's hurt and he can't move like he used to, that sort of ruins
things. Right.
And then what was Cephalosha's issue? He played.
I don't remember his. Some of his not playing was just that they tried to do the whole favors Gobert Ekpe Udoh rotation, and it kind of worked.
I think with Mbah Mute and Cephalosha, the problem is, are they a little bit too old? They kind of passed. Are they at that point where, like I was saying, like maybe they only really play 30 games, which is fine.
That's fine.
But then you can't really play it. Like, is there a chance they get hurt and then somebody else gets hurt and then you get screwed because you don't have the kind of third forward you need or whatever? Like you know, Zimbos gets hurt for 10 games, Sabonis gets hurt in between those for something, you know, and then you kind of have to play like TJ Leaf.
Shout well, out. Again, these guys, I think the goal is to sign them situationally. So you could have Leaf playing more often than them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how that's going to work. That's also.
Yeah, I don't know. But I clearly think they need a big forward. Like,
yeah,
I'm almost positive they were interested in JaMychal Green. And I know that he's of the mold they're looking for, of the forward who is big and can kind of defend away from the basket and can kind of shoot. And that is why I am naming the guys I am naming.
Yeah, I would lean towards two. They needed a veteran at this spot because they're a pretty young team overall. Now, as I say that too, I'm going to say I like a couple of the young guys they go after. I guess Lance Thomas isn't very young, so maybe he's
Lance Thomas is 30.
But I was thinking,
yeah, he's a good one.
Monta Hunis and Trey Lyles are both pretty young.
Trey Lyles can't really defend at all. But
no, he'll be more a flyer on a guy who had potential, showed some signs of being a decent player, kind of fell off and bring back Indiana. Maybe, I don't know.
I kind of feel like he's going to go back to Brooklyn just so they can have his rights, but he'll never play. So I don't really know what he's looking for.
Yeah, but is he going to play a lot here anyways too? I mean, probably not.
No, that's why I don't think he'll come here.
Unless he wants to come home, that'd be the only reason, right?
Yeah. He's young. I bet he ends up signing with like the Cavs or – I don't know, someone like that who's not very good and can offer him playing time more than anything. Lance Thomas is a good one, 31, just turned 31. He's like a pretty good shooter, actually, outside of last year, which sucks for him that in his contract year he was a clunker and was pretty much waived as a cap casualty for the Knicks to get KD and Kyrie, which is funny in retrospect.
Hilarious.
Yeah, so he's pretty good. He's more wing than forward, which is actually good in this instance because they need this guy to be more perimeter-based. You know, and if they go him, they could even have him be like a surrogate for McDermott and Leaf in certain situations, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's ever going to happen because unless somebody's hurt, right? Just because they have three centers, why would you
what?
Really want to do that, right?
What? What does this have to do with centers?
No, I mean, I'm thinking about you're going to – why would you insert both of them in line at the same time when you have like there's one of three guys you can have play center at any moment who are better than those guys, that's all.
I didn't say they should both be in the lineup.
That's what you just suggesting. They could do that.
No, he could be the surrogate instead of either.
Oh, I thought you meant insert together. I don't know why I heard that. I'm sorry.
I was like, where are these centers?
That's on me. Sorry. Okay. I mean, that's what that spot also think about is that maybe they start the year they won't play, but as soon as Leaf fails, they'll the next guy up, right?
Yeah, I think. Well, and I also think with anybody, like even if maybe not like a SAR, but like with any guy left, even the best player left, I think they're going to try to start the season with Leaf as the 10th guy, like in every situation.
Yes, right. So if I'm doing them, the 9th guy is McDermott.
Yes.
8th guy is Goga. Holiday's 7. Who's 6?
McConnell.
McConnell. McConnell would be somewhere between there. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm thinking with Vic healthy too. Like at the beginning of the year, it'll be a little different. You're right.
Because Vic, but you insert Sumner then.
Sumner, yeah, exactly. And Sumner can play the 3-2, which is more, I mean, Nate said that himself, which is more catering to the forward defender.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think whoever they sign ultimately doesn't play a lot just because I think they're going to go, when they need to switch it up, they'll go small just to play defense. They'll play Warren at the 4. I feel like that's...
Well, Warren's a horrible defender, so hopefully not.
Yeah.
That's why I think it needs to be defensive-minded guy.
Yeah, but if you get two big dudes, you're just gonna go Sabonis because Sabonis and Turner can probably hold against two bigs, right? You would hope.
Right.
If you do that, then you're screwed. I mean, what you can't have if two teams go big against your two big guys and you can't beat them, then this season's over. I mean, that's just it should be
a lot. Philly.
Yeah, but I mean, theoretically, right? That's what you have these two guys for is to be able to.
Hello, Philly.
I know.
Yeah, No, I mean it's kind of like Zig. One of the guys zag too. We'll see.
But I feel like instead they'll probably. I think their plan is to try to develop Warren to 4. Now that could fail too, and that's where this guy comes in as well. If that happens.
Yeah. I think they try Leaf and then this guy, personally, the backup 4. But just because Warren's going to be the starting 3, and
yeah,
and if he's anything like Bojan, he'll play like 28, 30 minutes.
Yeah, this might change too when Vic comes back because that will kind of shuffle things around. Because then you play Lamb 3 if you need to or stuff like that.
Lamb can play some reserve wing.
Yeah, they can go lineups where they go McConnell, Brogdon, and Oladipo maybe.
Yeah.
Just some weird shit.
Yeah, Brogdon not at the 1 would be cool.
Because Brogdon, I assume, can guard 1 through 3.
Yes, I agree.
So, I mean, if you have a team that especially has – I mean, I'm trying to think of a team that especially has like a bad defending point guard or just a bad point guard in general, you can go McConnell there and then try to counter by like the Heat, for example, right? Maybe you do that because the Heat don't really have anybody outside of Jimmy Butler, and you can just you think
Dragic.
Oh right, I was thinking he's going to be. Is he good though? Is he? Are we sure he's still good?
Yeah, when he hits his brace off on his knee, I think he'll be better this year.
Well, he'll be Russell Westbrook at some point.
Yeah, how are they getting Russ?
All right, let's take a quick break. And then on the other side, we're going to talk about Sabonis' extension. All right, welcome back in. Tony, gun to your head. Does Sabonis get more than the 4 for 70 guaranteed Turner got?
Oh, 72. No.
Okay. Does he get more than 60?
Yes. I think it's in that range.
Does he get more than 65?
I think it's in the 60 to 70 range.
Does he get more than 62.5?
I don't know what we're doing anymore.
I'm just cutting the number.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because there's sort of a power play dynamic of giving him more than Turner. And I don't know if they want to deal with that at this point in time.
Do you think Turner cares really, though?
I don't know if either of them care. But why? Like that's my only guess for the reason the Brogdon contract is structured the way it is. It's just so he isn't paid as much as Vic, either the 2 years they're overlapping for sure.
I don't think that matters because I think ultimately it's going to get a 4-year 150 max or 5-year 180, whatever they, you know.
Yeah, probably.
Anyways, he wants.
It's not nothing, you know. It's carefully structured stuff, and I think that Turner proved in the playoffs last year that he has more utility against the top teams specifically. Whoa. Now Sabonis could improve and completely change that.
But do Turner and Oladipo, either of those guys strike you having a huge ego? Because they don't to me.
No.
They seem like team-oriented guys who want to just win. And I honestly think if
Smoker, it matters more for like outside pressure on the team.
Yeah, like to me it seems like
more to be worse.
I feel like they'll give him the same contract as Turner. It's just kind of like
that's certainly in the range.
I mean, I think it'll be the exact same deal. Maybe different because doesn't Turner have a bunch of little incentive structures to get to like?
He does. He has a bunch of unlikely bonuses right now.
But right, aren't they kind of likely though? They're based on like a win share that they could probably. I don't remember.
No, he didn't get him last year, and he played good last year. So,
okay, so they're probably all defense kind of bonuses.
I don't remember what they are.
I assume they're tighter on that. If at least I was his agent, I'd be doing that. That'd be stupid not to.
They should give Sabonis the same bonuses.
Well, maybe that's what they do. I mean, that
do we? I wish we knew.
They ever know when somebody reports it? Right? There's not like. It's hard. I guess it's hard to know, or there's no like certain kind of bonus.
Some people get the deals somehow, but I haven't seen it anywhere.
Well, right. In some unlikely bonuses used to be like if it's 45 wins or more, that's one counts as unlikely, theoretically for most teams.
No, it just has to be something you didn't do last year to be unlikely.
Yeah, so like the Lakers, I think, set that up and for some of their guys. Was like, are they going to do that for their guys? Unlikely is 45.
Like Kevin Durant has an unlikely bonus this year for the Nets to win 43 games.
Yeah,
they won 42 last year.
Exactly.
It's so dumb that works, by the way.
No, but it's
like the Suns could could give a guy an unlikely 15% bonus if they win 20 games this year. Like that's like fake cap room. That's bullshit. Anyway,
I mean,
it's smart business technically, but it's smart for a guy to take it if they know they're going to get it.
No, but also it does technically help teams that were worse the year before.
Seems like fudging the rules. When I did
it helps teams that are bad. It does, right? If you're bad, it helps you get guys because you can offer different bonuses. Like it doesn't. Good teams can't keep stacking. Like
they could just pick the stat you did the worst in last year and just be like, point one higher.
One is the easiest one to pass when you're good. The everything else is all kind of you never.
Like Capella's was like hard, you know, but they could have made his easy if they wanted.
Well, like Turner's, they could have made it to win more than 48 games. But that's kind of a hard one. They could have made.
They could have made Turner's like.
Shouldn't like block
basically. 0.1 rebounds higher or like. Something yeah, but dumb.
Did he get 0.1 rebounds more higher this year? I don't remember.
Yes,
he did. Okay, I don't remember how his stats went up. I mean, his scoring didn't go up near the year, right? Maybe the last year did go up. Yeah, it went up by a little bit between. Yes, it did.
So they could have done like any stupid easy thing. Like what did he suck at his third year that he got better at the fourth year? You know, literally anything. Anyway, this is not related to the point here. I'm writing about a Sabonis extension and I have gone way too long and I have to cut it down tonight, but it should be out by the time this is out. So I'm okay talking about, all the stuff. So I have a bunch of things to consider here. So we're just going to run through them if that's cool.
That's fine.
Number one, the salary cap.
Yes, you've been on this for a few days.
What?
You've been on this one for a few days.
I have. I haven't really had time, unfortunately. Number one, the salary cap. They're going to be at the cap anyway next year, actually. Even if Leaf is gone and Alizé is gone, they're going to be at the cap next year without trades. I can't foresee those. So that's not an issue, right? Because either you're at the cap and you can pay him to go over, or you extend him and you're already over. Like that.
What's the rule? You can go over 25% of the cap before you hit the luxury tax number threshold?
No, it's like the first year of the new CBA, it was like 30 million over, and then it raises by the same percent as the cap every year.
So
it's like 31 million away. They're not even going to be close, even if Sabonis gets a max next summer.
Okay.
They're still pretty far
away. It was 20 this last year, which that would be right the number where Sabonis could get theoretically, right?
Yes, yeah.
The only
time they'd have to deal with the tax would be if Vic gets the max and Sabonis gets the max, which he won't. That first year of Vic, when they have everybody still, they'd probably be in it, and they'll never pay it. So, but that's not an issue because Sabonis isn't going to get the max. So the cap is not an issue. Like, it's just not. So the moving on to the second point for me, which I have, is trade value. Because it's interesting. So his trade value now is pretty solid. Like, we saw how that shook out in the Conley discussion. If you sign him to an extension, it's really hard to trade him this season because of poison pill, not because of any playing constraint. Just the contract rule means it's just really hard to trade him.
Trading him this year, too, assuming you're committing to the idea, Smoltz Turner would be stupid unless it just horribly fails before February.
Exactly. That's part of this calculus we'll get to later. So if you extend him and then it is a disaster, that means two things. One, you're stuck with him. Not stuck with him. He's good, but you know, you're stuck with an unfavorable situation. And two, his value is probably going down, right? Because that means he's probably playing worse, or his stats look worse because he's playing in a situation that isn't good for him. And now he's got more money coming up in the future. You know, it's worse for his trade value in that way. Or it does work out and you want to keep him. So there's not really a situation where his trade value goes up from an extension. I haven't found a way that he becomes like a drastically better asset in an extension, unless Turner like breaks his leg this season and then Sabonis is amazing after getting extended.
Well, here's a scenario I could at least see. One, let's say all three centers have a good year. Goga has shown some signs that he could be a starting caliber center. Turner has a great season, and Sabonis has a good season, let's say. That's when he has sort of this most value because you have the most leverage.
That's true.
Right? That's where his most – not because a lot of this is about leverage, right? If the teams know you need a trade bonus, you're going to lose leverage in trading, guys. Just like
– that's true.
Because that's kind of the thing with Paul George, right? The Pacers lost
another a lot part of it.
Paul George said he wanted to leave, and now that teams didn't know that, Paul George had a ton of leverage to be able to trade him for a ton of shit.
Yeah.
Two, part of it is just securing the asset, because if you don't sign him right this season, then you're not going to be able to trade him for two more seasons because you have to re-sign him for a year, which then you can't trade until that December, which you could do theoretically. But if you get him this summer, you lock down the asset. If you get him at an 18 or 17 million range, that's probably what he's worth. It's a number that teams could talk themselves into for sure. It's a kind of contract you can piece together with the McDermott, another guy to get the max number to trade for another guy. Like, it just sort of makes sense. Because even if Sabonis does lose some value and they can't play together, I don't see it as an untradeable deal, because I don't think it's going to be somebody's not going to take it on.
No, I don't think that will happen.
You just won't be able to flip it for like something fantastic, but you might be able to flip it for a power. Like, I mean, in a year, I'd say Jaylen Brown does the same thing, and Brown doesn't sign an extension or whatever. Maybe you can flip it in a sign and trade to sign Brown to an offer sheet or something like that.
That would be great. But if they can't do that unless if they give him an extension, that wouldn't be the same. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
It would be a new league year, right?
Right, but that's not a sign and trade at that point.
No, I'm talking about if they
like Brown gets signed and traded.
That's what I'm saying. Like, kind of like the Brogdon thing, where you don't have room to sign Brown, but if you sign and trade, you can create the room.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing for his trade value. I don't think his trade value went up in that instance. He just was worth Jaylen Brown.
No, it's because really that's also the thought with the Turner Musing is that you just flip one for a guy of same value, but a position that you need more.
Yeah. That is absolutely true. And I think that you're right. I did not think about that, where the only way his trade value goes up is if all three of Turner, Sabonis, and Goga have a great year. Now, the team seems to think that will happen, and that could mean there's a higher chance of an extension happening. And according to Charlie Clifford, that they're discussing it. It's just, I don't see, I only, now that you've said this, I have struggled to see a path where it's overwhelmingly more likely that he grows in trade value. I don't think he's going to lose, like you said. I don't think it'll go down even a ton at all, like maybe even only a little bit, but it still is a factor.
Yeah, but I think is more important to secure the asset.
That's here's the big one about securing the asset. And this is my biggest point. Okay. Next year's free agency class is horrible, like impossibly bad. So he could be a guy that some teams just like, all right, let's throw all our money at this guy. You know,
How many teams have a ton of cap space next summer? I'm assuming a lot of teams inked multi-year deals, so the cap space is going to be shrunk as well.
Let's see. The Hawks, the Hornets,
okay,
the Cavs, the Knicks, the Suns, the Raptors, and a few more can easily get there.
It feels like a Raptor if they, you know what I mean? Like
$1 million Raptor. Warren Masai connection is strong there.
But maybe that's also how he's able to get a better deal this year, because he knows that and he has that leverage point over the Pacers. I don't know. I don't know how badly Sabonis needs the money. Turner, in my opinion, probably wanted to lock in that big contract because it's life-changing money. Sabonis, I'm assuming, comes from a pretty well-off family because his father was a really good basketball player. But, still $72 million or whatever he could get is, like, it's amazing.
I know nothing of their family situations.
Me either. Solid comments. There's always a crisis a lot of times with some of these players when you're deciding, do I want to go in a year or not? Do you want to risk the injury? Do you want to risk Isaiah Thomas is a great example of that kind of thing, where if he had not played through that injury and gotten re-hurt, he probably could have, if he had a half-decent second next year in Boston and hadn't played in the playoffs, he probably would have huge trade value.
The Cleveland year killed him.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm saying if he had decided, the minute he got hurt, that he wasn't going to play anymore and play through a hip injury and just said, I'm going to recover, I'm going to come back and play 40 games and look decent, and I could probably, maybe he wouldn't have got the $100 million, could have got a 2 or 3 year, $30, $40 million. So he's sitting on a $1.5 million minimum deal, which is like nothing.
Oh, I thought he was fine either way until the Cleveland year. It was just so bad with the Lakers and the Cavs.
Yeah, but I think his Cleveland year was so bad because he played through that injury in the playoffs and made it worse and wasn't able to recover fast enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's the type you have to make. I mean, guys better than themselves all the time and it works. You know, Capella kind of did that. Capella didn't take him, whatever, the Rockets or anything, bet on himself and he got a nice contract after it. So it just depends.
Yeah. So the final factor is less a factor, more just like your opinion. One is, how good do you think Sabonis is? If you think he's very good, which I mean, I think we all do, then you want to keep a good player. Like, having good players in a contract is good. And the other one is, how much faith do you have in the Sabonis Turner pairing? Because if you have a very low faith in the Sabonis Turner pairing, locking into it or like forcing yourself to have to alter it in a year already is awkward and not good, but if you have even a modicum of faith in it, then it might make sense. So I think overall, it probably makes more sense than not to do it. There's just a lot of reasons not to. There are just also a lot of reasons to.
I think that it's going to be really good against some teams, like some bad team. It's going to look good for maybe 50, 60 games. It's going to look horrible in some, and the playoffs is going to get run off the court.
Yeah, and the playoffs is where I think it also will be a disaster.
I don't know if that's going to tank its value or not, and maybe they don't make very far in the playoffs, so it won't matter, right? Maybe they don't, go 6 or 7 games and nobody can see it's that bad. And so, I don't know. I mean, part of me says if both Sabonis and Turner improve on the margins and Sabonis is in good enough – or both good enough shape and have the ability not to get in foul trouble a crazy amount – think it's in the court that they're going to be pretty good because both individuals are pretty good players if they can stay on the court. I mean, a lot of the problem last year was that Sabonis only played 24 minutes because he couldn't stay in the court half the time. Turner, I think, only played like 28. I mean, he was in foul trouble all the time. That was part of their problem.
Yeah, Turner cut his fouls on a bunch last year. It wasn't that bad.
Maybe he just a lot of first half fouls.
He had a lot of fouls on Joel Embiid, which...
Yeah. Well, so let's see. Turner had 2.6 fouls per game, which you're right, is way down from his peak at 3.2 per game. Sabonis
is up, right, from the year before.
Sabonis is 3.2, which is up from his last year of 3. But Sabonis played 25 minutes.
He played more minutes. Yeah,
Sabonis played 25 minutes and averaged 14 points per game. If you obviously this doesn't mean anything, but if you per 36, he gets 20 points per game. I mean, he has real offensive talent. He can stay on the floor. He's a real post up player. Like if you have him with Vic, you have another like go to option if you get the ball to him in the post.
Yeah. No, he's good.
So
he's good.
I don't know. Are you in favor of him signing an extension? Would you be if they do it on what's the last day they do it? Like September something?
The day before the first game.
So what day is that? October 8th, 17th, 16th?
Something like that.
Would you be in favor of that? Like David Turner?
It depends on the value, actually. Because I'm 50-50 on it, it's just a value thing for me. Like last year, I was okay with the Turner extension at a value that I thought was for sure going to be a bargain for him. And I wasn't sure when they signed him to 4 for 80 with incentives that that was going to be a bargain. And then it turns out it is.
4 for 72. Is that a bargain?
Not a bargain, no. It okay. could turn out to be one, like with Turner, though. So
okay. I think that's fair. I think I would expect a four. So Turner's deal was 4 for 80 with $70 million guaranteed, and I think it's 18.
72, right?
Yeah, 72. So I keep saying 70. That's what yeah. Sports Track says, but Sports Track is wrong. It's 72. With his average annual, his cap hit each year is $18 million flat. Yep. I expect something similar for Sabonis, just simply to kind of put them at parity. You know, saying they're this kind of the same player.
Yeah. If they do it, I think it'll be around that value too. But it'll be interesting. It will be interesting to see how it goes. I'm surprised that they're so open about admitting they're pursuing it. That's interesting to me.
I mean, I think it's because they. I think.
But he's good, so
it's a sign of faith. They want to bring him back. That they buy that they can play together. Sort of
definitely a sign of faith in the pairing. Very yeah, very high praise for that.
All right, let's take another break, and then we're gonna do some comparisons in the division. Welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. So Tony, are the Pacers still the second best team in the Central?
Yeah, yeah.
That was really unenthusiastic. Well,
I think at full health, they are definitely the second best team in the division. Like the Cavs suck; they're just awful.
Well, obviously the Bulls.
The Bulls got better. They got Thad and Satoransky, and they'll have growth from their young guy. They'll probably be like a 500 team. I don't think the Pacers can sweep the Bulls. Actually, they're probably a little worse than 500. Anyway, I don't think the Pacers will sweep the Bulls this year. They're clearly fourth. And then the Pistons last year were really good. We've said this before. When all three of Jackson, Drummond, and Blake were healthy, now, again, you're going to tell me, yes, they're not all going to be healthy. I understand that they're all going to miss games, thus that doesn't really matter. But, you know, they're closer to the Pacers than I think people are thinking just because of Vic's injury. But I still think they're second after free agency just because Derrick Rose is not enough to push the Pistons over the Pacers, and he's the only big signing within the division. Like for the closest team.
Sorry. So what if the Pistons get Russell Westbrook?
Yeah, then they're better.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I don't know about that one.
Yeah. Russ is really good.
I know. Those are three.
Russ substantially increases your floor while substantially lowering your ceiling at the same time.
Puts you right in 48 wins.
Yeah, exactly. It's really well, exactly. But that's like the point for the Pacers, right? Like if Vic's missing 30 games, 48's going to be pretty hard to get.
Well, they got 48 where he put half the season last year.
That's true.
And the East didn't get better, really, if you look at it.
No, at best, stayed the same.
Yeah.
I don't think it got better. I saw a poll today. Alex Golden tweeted a poll today of if the East got better or worse, and better was winning when I voted for worse. I was like, what?
I mean, I guess there's more parity because Butler left the Sixers, so that makes the Heat better, theoretically. But – and I guess KD, Kyrie changed teams, making that team kind of better too.
Kawhi left the conference.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Even if everybody else is shuffling, like if KD was playing this year, I think you could have an argument for better, but he's not. They got worse.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of shuffling of talent from the good teams to some of the other teams that have made it a little more parity, right?
Brogdon, I was texting with someone about what I think the East standings are going to be this year. I'm just going to read it off. Shout out to Ben Jones. I have the Pacers very low, Adam, so be prepared to be mad at me.
Oh, what do you have?
Sixth or seventh, actually, just because of that injury. All right.
What's your win total for the Pacers?
Right now, I'd probably say 44.
That would have been the sixth last year.
Yes, that's true.
Actually, it would have been the five. Sorry. They were.
I got Philly one. Five. I got Philly one and Milwaukee two. Not that I think Philly's going to get so much better. I think they're about the same in the aggregate based off all the moves they made. I just think Milwaukee got worse losing Brogdon. So that's my 1-2. Boston 3. Kemba's big for them. They'll have less Kyrie will help them, I think. I have Toronto 4th. Remember when we talked about how I'd have Toronto's going to be worse? I thought more about them, and I have Siakam helping them quite a bit. Brooklyn 5. Miami with Russ in parentheses 6th. Pacers 7th. That's why I said 6th or 7th, because if Russ does not go to the Heat, I would put the Pacers above them. And
The thing is, though, if Russ goes to the Heat, I'm still going to say this. The Heat have two good players, but like they have nobody else. Assuming they have to give up, like.
They have like a bunch of overpaid guys. I don't think they're bad. But Waiters is bad. And
well, they have to match the salaries, too. So they're going to send out like three guys to be able to get him anyway.
Yeah, like if they can, like Kelly Olynyk's useful and James Johnson's useful and Bam's useful. Like, I don't know. It depends on who they send out, but I think they'll be pretty good still. Like Russ and Jimmy is like a pretty freaking good duo.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the Thunder, who won about 49 games with probably a worse roster than them around them, even.
Yeah.
Right.
So Toronto, I get what Toronto and Brooklyn, I get why they could be worse than the Pacers. I just, until I know how many games Vic's going to miss, I'm going to, and given the way that we haven't really talked about this, Pritchard said in that Summer League game, like, we're going to be so cautious with this, which makes a ton of sense. That makes me lead to believe that he'll be out a hefty number of games. So
I think Christmas time is when he comes.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Which I don't remember how many games they played before Christmas. I want to look at
20-25.
Yeah, I thought it was a little more than that. Maybe I'm crazy. It might be 15 games a month.
Well, they start earlier now. So
14 games a month. Yeah, they start like October 19th or 20th this year. So they probably play four in October, 15 in November, and
yeah, I think they play, like you said, that's
somewhere between 25 and 30.
Yeah, they play about, they play about 12 or 13 a month, I believe. So, yeah. So all November, all of December, plus that's about 30 games.
Right. In Toronto, I only moved them up two because there's been reports that they're not going to trade their veteran expiring guys.
No, they're going to do a victory lap here, I assume, right?
Yeah, so that will move them up too, because Lowry, Gasol, Ibaka, et cetera. Those guys,
yeah, good. I don't know if they're that. I mean, I guess you have to.
Siakam's going to be an all-star next year.
Yeah, but I don't know if that team is regular season night in, night out great, just because they have so many old guys who might be missing lots of games here and there. I think they're a playoff team. I mean, but I think maybe they're more like a 44.
After Boston in the East, I think it's a lot of teams that are like, hey, pretty good regular season team with a bunch of injured guys.
I think Toronto's win total 44, 45 is the right, to be honest.
Okay, maybe this whole morass is about 44, 45.
I mean,
from 4-7.
So Boston is obviously – well, is Boston better?
Yeah. No, they're not better. I think they win like 48 to 50 again.
Right.
That's going to be three in the East this year.
I would say if you just sub Kemba for Kyrie, yes, but they lost Horford, and Horford's a big part of that team.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, I think they're about their – Philly, I get why you would say they'd be their one seed. On paper, they should be, but how have they only won 51 games last year? Like, does Embiid miss 20 games or whatever? I don't know.
They didn't have Jimmy the whole year. They didn't have Tobias the whole year. Like,
Are they going to take a little while to get everybody acclimated too?
Because that's possible. I mean, Horford's kind of scheme proof, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think Milwaukee's for sure number one.
I'll cut that. They're going to be super good again
because Giannis is at that like LeBron level where like he just opens the court and can win 40 games without even moving. You know what I mean?
Well, okay. Another thing with Giannis, he got the MVP. Like, what are the odds that they just load manage him next year?
Yeah, but remember what those LeBron years in the mid 2000s were like, 07 to 2010, every year they had won 65 games just because he was that dominant of a player. And like, it didn't matter. You could love management play him 30. They did. They play him 32 minutes a game. He still was dominant. The team seems not as deep as on Brogdon, but Giannis is so damn good and wins.
He was unbelievable last year.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's going to be at LeBron 07, 08 level.
LeBron played like 40 minutes a game in the mid 2000s.
Really? He did?
Yeah. 2004, 42 led the league. 2005, 42. 2006, 40. 2007, 40. 2008, 09, 37.7. They started to figure it out. And guess what? I think they made the finals that year.
I will say this, too. Just because Giannis won one MVP, you don't think he wants five MVPs and two titles?
No. I just – like the goals for the Bucks now are not necessarily let's get our – like now he's supermax eligible. You know, even his goals might change to I want to win a title.
Yeah, but Giannis has the ability to be like one of the greatest players of all time.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying he's gonna play like 60 games.
No, but to become that, you need to rack up. What is LeBron at, 4 MVPs? You need like at least 3 MVPs.
3, 4? I don't remember.
I think LeBron is 4. I think he won 3 in Cleveland and 1 in Miami, or 2 in Cleveland.
Giannis is still 24.
Yeah,
that's crazy, dude.
I gotta figure out, does LeBron have 4 MVPs? He does, right?
He has 4, right? It's just on his Basketball Reference page. I can literally just click back. Yes, 4. You're right.
So 2 in Cleveland and 2 in Miami.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I mean that's kind of what he needs to be.
Yeah, he's got plenty of time.
I know plenty of time, but like I just see them being really good again because he's just
I'm not arguing that. They're gonna be really good.
I mean, here's what I think.
They're gonna win the division. Like, they're number one, done. That's it. Even losing Brogdon and inserting Wes Matthews for him, done.
I think 4-7 in the East. No, we were doing division, but I think 4-7 are all going to come down into the win totals. That's what I think.
Ultimately. Interesting.
I think you're looking at, I mean,
it helps Detroit. I mean, that makes it 4-8, really.
Yeah.
They won 42 last year. They probably got a little bit better this summer.
Yeah. I'm adding the Heat. I'm doing the Heat with Westbrook thing, too. So, like, I'm thinking Bucks, Sixers, Celtics all at 48-60. Let's say Bucks, but, you know, just that.
Yep.
And then I think you'll get the Pacers, the Nets, because even that's with Kyrie, yeah, they're going to be better, but they don't have, you know, they have DeAndre Jordan. He's pretty awful.
Whispers in the background. Are they really better?
I mean, I was going to say, are they really better? Like, I kind of like that.
Isn't it sad? Man, I feel bad doing this to Kyrie, but are they really better?
Yeah,
I mean, guess they're healthy Karis matters, but
they have DeAndre Jordan and they
DeAndre
they
have terrible dollar
tied to dead weight right now because Katie and DeAndre Jordan can't move.
I think next year they're going to be incredible, but
oh yeah, I mean I think we'll see. Are they going to be able to figure it out with Kyrie? Is he going to Somebody said this that I think Zach
Lessig, Kyrie's incentives, by the way, are wild.
What are they?
Let me see if I can get them. Zach Lowe put them out in an article today.
Because Zach Lowe said on a podcast at one point that Kyrie wanted to be like do the James Harden, basically. He was pissed that Brad Stevens would not let him do that. That he wanted to be just ISO heavy, have the ball all the time, make moves, score, be a like a 30-point a game guy.
It's wild that I can find an aggregated article of the incentives before the actual article of the incentives.
SEO
is crazy. Okay. Kyrie has eight $125,000 unlikely bonuses. Okay.
Yeah,
ready?
Yeah.
70 games played. He appears in 60 games and averages fewer than 2.4 turnovers per game, 2.4. He appears in 60 games and attempts 4.6 free throws per game. He shoots 88.5% or better from the free throw line in the regular season. Makes at least 2.8 three-pointers per game. Commits fewer than 2.1 fouls per game. And the Nets offensive rating when him on the floor is 114, which is like the best offense in the league number.
Here's what I can't wait for. On game 82, he's played 59 games and they tell him he can't play.
So my mom is a math teacher. She's a middle school math teacher.
Okay.
And she tells her students about the year Mo Harkless was like 1 3-point make over his bonus and just didn't shoot threes for the last like 5 games of the season to get his bonus.
That happens in baseball. A lot of guys who need a certain batting average and want to win the crown will just stop trying.
Yeah.
Or like Carmelo did that when he wanted to win the scoring title.
He just went crazy in the last game.
But it's so stupid. The scoring title is based on points per game, not total points scored in a season.
I know.
But that's beside the point.
Yeah. And like in football, I heard that running backs were like close to their rushing yard total. I always tell the quarterback, like, don't audible as much today, like in the last game of the season.
And I watched it in the NFL, what they'll do. And on basketball, I don't know if you can, but the NFL, they'll just, if they're close in the last game, the team will just give it to them.
Yeah.
Like,
so this is not Pacers related. This is just fun. Like Kyrie's turnover thing is 2.4 for his career. He's like, 2.6, just above it. So he used to be a little better there.
Well, I was going through it. The three-point thing, he averaged 2.6 last year and 2.8 the year before.
Yep.
He did 2.
These are, they're all like a smidge below or above like the number he had.
The games thing, because really, look at his.
Yeah, he does not play very many games every year.
He's only played over 60, about half his career. He'll have to play under 60.
Yeah, and he'll have that one every year. So it's funny, the ones he gets will become likely, which change. I mean, they're going to be over the cap no matter what, but it's a fun cap calculus for them.
Yeah, it's trying to stay under the cap for a few.
They won't. They're already over next year.
No. It's I mean, and Sonny, I'm trying to get the space to sign.
Right.
And then they then become likely. And then
those eight incentives are how they were able to give DeAndre $40 million. So we should be thankful.
So what? How much Rich incentive for? 1.25. You said
$125,000.
Okay, so it's a total of what's like $1 million.
Yes, exactly, man. Him being 1 million shy of his max allowed them to get.
Actually, no, it is 1 million on the dots. I'm sorry. Yes, it is.
Yeah, I know. That million allowed them to have enough to give DeAndre exactly 4 for $40. Thanks, Kyrie.
And Katie did something similar too, right?
No, he was going to, and then they made the sign and trade with D'Angelo, and they were able to.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So yeah, pretty. So the Nets did some interesting stuff to not be that much better this first year. Now, when Katie's back, they'll obviously be good.
Yeah.
I think like if Detroit is healthy, like really healthy the whole year, I think they're probably better than the Pacers. But betting on that is a stupid bet. So I think that the Pacers will be better.
How old is Blake Griffin?
30? 29? Laz, if you're listening, I'm sorry, we don't know how old Blake is.
He is 30. 30 in March.
Oh.
I
don't think he'll step. I don't think he'll take a step back, though.
To me, I feel like they're the Westbrook destination because they're okay just being the 5 seed. They just want to. I mean,
well, the thing for them too is like, I guess finally in 2021 they're free from some cap stuff, but like they're just capped out. Like,
Also, I mean, Westbrook, DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, if it was 2000, he wins the NBA title. And who knows? Maybe everybody gets hurt.
That's why, same with the Heat and the Pistons. I guess the Heat, both of them are free from their contract crap in like two seasons. But like, you're already capped out. Just like, be it capped out for a really good player.
Yeah, well, the Heat's problem too is they have all their picks are out the door, so that's a whole.
Yeah, well, I'm not trading too many picks for.
You're not trading any picks for Westbrook. You're just trying to trade contract.
Maybe one.
I don't know, but 40 years at 185. I think you're just trading. You're just giving them less salary back long term. Yeah. That's why a wall for Westbrook kind of seems interesting because it's one less year. But
official prediction.
Okay.
When Russ is traded, J.R. Smith is involved in a three teamer.
Because he has a non-guaranteed deal or something like that?
Yeah, I got my J.R. Smith trade wrong at the draft. So,
what's his non-guarantee?
It's funny. It's like 3-point-something now, and then on the 15th, if he's not traded, it becomes 4-point-something, and then at the end of the month, it becomes 5-point-something. It's like all the way up to the maximum number it could be for the Cavs to not be in the tax if they waive him. So if they can't find a trade by like the last day of the month, they'll just cut him.
So what does he get, like a second-round pick from somebody in the same contract?
Oh, my gosh. He could cut like 14 million off your salary. He's a first will be
held. Wait, what do you? Oh, what's his actual cap number?
Like
then?
17 million or something. Oh. Pretty high.
Yeah, the Heat could use him.
Yeah, that's why I thought that they. Oh, maybe I'm wrong. That's why I thought they would make that draft night trade. But again, getting Jimmy obviously makes that not. Yeah, 15.6 million. But yeah, that's why I thought they were gonna do that on draft night before I thought that the Jimmy thing was a thing.
Yeah, I guess that he would be the third player in a deal. It actually might be even Oklahoma City sending a second round pick out to get him to cut salary to get him.
Exactly. It seems like a lock, but who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
So we got distracted there, but we talked enough about the Pacers, right?
Yeah, so I think for now they're number two in the division.
Yes, agreed.
And I think they're 5-6 in the East.
Yeah, right around there. Again, I was being a little maybe too harsh there. With seven, but I mean, it's hard to see them jumping higher than fourth, and I think it's more likely that some of those teams are ahead of them than the Pacers are ahead of them.
We'll see. I'm gonna give you one scenario before we go. Let's say, so 2 years from now, Turner Sabonis works out there, they can work together, they're positive, blah, 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 all the good stuff.
Yep.
What seed are they in 2021? Assuming KD's back, so let's say the Nets hop them, are they better than Boston at that point?
So they're not – they're only adding a guy next year with the mid-level exception in that instance. So
yeah, but is the team they have constructed now with a healthy Oladipo and a working Sabonis Turner a really good at basketball team from this?
Yeah, it's right up there with those top three this year.
Right, that's okay. That's what I would think it'd be probably just a notch below Nets, Bucks, but maybe – in Philly, but – so the May is still the fourth seed, honestly.
Yeah.
Simon KD is going to be good when he comes back from this killing there, which is a whole other question.
And we'll find out.
Yeah, it's a whole other issue. All right, anything else? I know you
said we did a lot of fighting about not the Pacers in this episode.
It's okay. It's fine. People have missed our banter.
Tomorrow or the weekend is you doing your show this week, correct?
Yep, I'm going to do one probably for either tomorrow. Like I say, either Friday or for Saturday at this side.
Yep, there's a Summer League game tomorrow if you want to talk about that, but I don't know if you're going to watch it.
I'll watch it. I'll talk about it, but I'll watch it.
So, assuming they're done with Summer League this week and early next week, we are back to one day a week.
Sorry,
week, everybody. Every Monday.
Let's figure out how to make this work.
Summer mode. Yeah. I mean, we thought free agency would be done by now. It's kind of done, but
there's one more.
Like, I'm not going to. We'll do an emergency podcast for when they use the room exception on whoever the hell. But
okay. That's fine with me.
We're down to one a week, folks. I hate to do it, but it's that time. There's just not enough happening.
Well, you guys know you can follow this podcast at Locked On Pacers. You can follow Tony at Teased NBA. You can follow me at FreedomAdam5. As always, you can leave us reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get this podcast. You can complain about Tony's eating if you want. Feel free to do that.
Didn't do it today.
Not eat right now. You might have heard my coffee mug. I took a sip of that. That was about it. Sorry if that annoyed people out there. Thanks, guys, for listening. We'll see you guys again tomorrow.